So I got all the information from the post exchanges are actually a military operation. So you have a major or captain or somebody like that will be in charge, but they also have a civilian part of it too. So there's a civilian manager. And I went and talked to both of them and found out all the particulars and found out what their rate schedule was for repairs. And anyway, I turned in a bid at the base to get the service part of the repairs. They wouldn't let you do any selling of a major selling. You maybe could sell a watch band when you repaired a watch or something like that, but you couldn't sell jewelry or anything. But you could repair, you could get all the service work. And there was a little corner, a little bench, and a little department that was the repair department in the base exchange, which was a pretty large operation and handled all, you know, everything else, had clothing and food and everything that the people at the base could buy. So we put in our bid on it, and we got the bid. We got the bid for the service work, and so we would take it. We hired a young lady to go out, and she would take the work in at the base, and then bring it in. We'd pick it up, or she'd bring it in each evening, and we started repairing all the work that came in, and the work. There was a lot of work coming in because it was a pretty big base and a lot of servicemen, and we would work on the watches. We would set up almost a factory line type of assembly line repair work situation, and we hired another watchmaker, and then Vern and Bob, it was Bob Parkhurst that we hired, and Vern and Bob and I would sit there and repair watches in the evening after we'd closed the store. We'd go home and have a little dinner, and then we'd go back down, and we would repair watches till 11 or midnight or whatever it took us. And then we'd go on back home and get up the next morning and go in and start to, and run the store. Well, then I had already quit and wasn't working the railroad, and it wasn't very long after that we found that there was enough work coming in out there that Vern quit the railroad also, and we found that there was enough cash flow from that repair business to supplement our income to kind of help us get over the hard part of getting the jewelry store off and running and really going good. In fact, it was we got a kick out of it because the one time I went in to buy repair tickets, because you would, when you would take the watch in to repair it, you would put a ticket with on a little string, you would tie it to the watch, and you'd give the stub to the customer so they had a way to identify the watch when they come in to pick it up. And I went in and I bought 10,000 of those tickets, and the girl where I bought them kind of laughed and said, "Boy, you know, that's going to last you forever, because the average jewelry store repairing watches, if they used 1,000 of them in a year, it was kind of amazing." And so I bought 10,000 of them, and 6 months later I went to buy 10,000 more, and she couldn't figure out what I was doing with them, because we were running so many repairs through out there, and it really built up. Shortly after we got that contract, I talked the manager of the place into moving our booth, our repair department, right by the door. It was clear back in a corner and very hard for people to find, and they didn't see it automatically. They had to go looking for it. And I talked him into allowing us to build this little place right up near the front door that would be our repair department. And when we moved it up to there, why, our repair work doubled, because people would just see us every time they'd come in and out of the PX, and so it really built up big, and we did a lot of volume of repairs. It's hard work, because you you don't make any money unless you're working, you know, at the bench, which is all right, but it was difficult. And we ended up finally, we got up to where we had 5 watchmakers working, repairing watches to keep up with the volume of work out there. And then that became, we realized how good that was. So then I went down to El Toro Marine Base, which was down in Orange County, was about 35 miles away. And I went to the Marine Base there and found out all the particulars of when their bid would come up. And I bid in down there and got the work to do the repair work at El Toro. We hired a man to sit in. And by now we had done the same thing in both. We had a man in the place who could do some major, I mean, there's minor work on the watches on the premises and do some adjustments and things and take the work in and book the work out. And so we had a man at each place, and then we would bring the work up and work on them at night. Like I say, we had up to 4 and 5 watchmakers full-time all the time working on watches, keeping that work up. But it really supplemented our income very good and gave us a cash flow that helped us over a very tough time when the business really was not doing enough volume of sales to generate that much income. And we worked that way for quite a few years, and it was hard work. We would work the jewelry store during the day, we'd go back down and repair watches at night, and we'd get back up the next morning and start over. And in the meantime, I got called as a high councilman in our stake, and the high council, where they met for the stake center at that time was over in Pomona. That's where they held most of those stake meetings, because that's where the stake president lived. And so I would have to, well, for all the meetings that I had to attend, I had to go to Pomona, and then I was assigned to audit wards and branches, and I went out and audited Elsinore and the one out at Paris and at Hemet, and at that time they didn't give the high councilman one ward that he was assigned to. They moved him around quite a bit, so I wasn't in one particular ward, but I didn't get to be in my own ward too much because I nearly always had some assignment out around at some of the others. And I worked, I was in, as a high councilman, like I say, for 3 or 4 years, and then they made another change and reorganized the stake and changed the boundaries, and then I ended up back in ward work again, and I worked as a in the mutual again, and started working with the boys again, working in explorers and scout work, and had some great experiences and some great trips with the young men. One of them that we took 2 or 3 times that was real interesting, we took the explorer age boys and went over out of Page, Arizona, and Peach Springs, and hiked down into one of the areas of the Grand Canyon. It's one of the tributaries. It isn't the main Grand. It's where the Havasu River comes in, and it's through a Supai Indian reservation. And it was a 10-mile hike from where you'd park your cars or trucks to get down into this camp that we'd go to, and we'd hike all the boys down in there with full packs 10 miles down in, and then we'd camp there. We'd go through a little village on the way, which was a little Indian village of about a population of about 300, and they were very primitive because they had no roads, no transportation down in there. The only way they come in and out off the rim were with mules. Now, of course, they go in and out with helicopters, but in those days, they just mule pack was about the only thing that got them supplies in and out of their village. They lived down in there on the river, and it was a beautiful river, very high calcium content in the river. So everywhere the river ran over rocks or formations, it would this calcium deposit would deform and just make beautiful formations in this white look inside the underneath the water. And then there were two big falls down there. There was the Havasu Falls and was Mooney Falls, and they were both, the Havasu was kind of like a series of drops. They dropped 5 or 10 feet and so on, but the Mooney Falls was a long one. It dropped about 100 feet, just one long drop down, and was very beautiful. So it was a beautiful place to go and an interesting place to take the boys on hike. There were caves to explore, and you could hike about a half a mile or so below where we camped, and you'd be down in where the Colorado River, where this river, the Havasu, ran into the Colorado, and so it was really a fun experience to take the boys in to see those places. I worked, like I say, during that time I worked quite a bit with scouts and explorers and a mutual organization. I also worked and taught in Sunday school. And then our family started to grow, and that's when Steve was born. I'll back up just a little bit. When Marty was born in Las Vegas, it was a very small hospital, and I knew the doctor real well. And when I went out to the hospital, when we took Jeannie out, why, the doctor asked me if I would like to come in. And I said, sure. And so I put on a gown and went in and was there when Marty was born. And that was the first that I had seen in any baby born. And it was just really a thrilling experience to see that little guy. And it was really a wonderful experience. And now they primarily have most of the fathers go in, if they will, and be there when the babies are born. But at that time, that didn't happen very often. The usual type of my memory, I was wrong on Steve's situation. Steve was also born in Las Vegas at that same hospital, the Clark County Hospital, where Marty was born. And he was born, about a year before we left? Anyway, about a year before we left Las Vegas. So he was still just a little baby when we moved into Riverside. And so we had the three little boys when we got down there.